Okay, we'll call to order the Town of Curie Beach Historical Preservation Commission for Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. First item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda. Are there any motions to change the agenda or to adopt the agenda?
I'd like to move that we adopt the agenda.
Hang on a minute. Did you want to add some things to the agenda?
No, I thought the HPC discussion would need an agenda item. That's just
It falls underneath what you've been discussing.
Just a point of reference.
It does fall under.
Yeah,
the legal discussion's under P&Z.
Let me just clarify a couple of things. You sent a link to Wrightsville Beach litigation.
That's for the P&Z.
And you sent a link today to...
for the Court of Appeals.
And now, is that HPC?
That's HPC, because that's quasi-judicial.
Is that covered by something on the agenda?
Yeah, it kind of falls with their discussion of their historic preservation.
Okay.
They've been discussing it under there already, so...
That's fine.
Okay. All right, so Kathleen, you made a motion to approve the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Next item is adoption of the minutes. Hopefully everybody's had a chance to look at the minutes. Are there any changes or is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Public comments? Anybody on the phone?
We have one person besides Gary on the phone.
Okay, it's star 6, right? Okay.
Correct.
If there's anybody on the phone who wants to speak during the public comment period for the historic preservation, feel free to press star 6 and you can speak. Okay, hearing none, we will close public comments and go to old business. Continued discussion of historic property designation. I think I sent out an email. I did present as requested by the Historic Preservation Commission to talk to the town council during this last meeting about two things that we had talked about. One had to do with working with the Federal Point Historic Preservation Group about identifying properties and sending out a letter encouraging them to apply for designation and a plaque, basically. The town council thought that was a great idea, and so they encouraged us to do that. So I think that was a good recommendation, and they certainly encouraged us to do that. So, you know, we can talk about that in more detail. In fact, does anybody want to talk about that right now, about what the best way of doing that? Jim, you have it?
If you want, I could carry this down to them to see if they have any recommendations.
Yeah, that would be great. They might have a list of addresses already. And certainly the town council, and this is the way I put it, that it would be under the letterhead of the Historic Preservation Commission to send this out to Curie Beach properties.
Well, they've got a list of addresses.
I think that would be great. So maybe the next meeting you could bring that, and then we can think about how we want to write a letter and send it out. But the town council gave us permission to do that.
Fine.
Okay.
And Jim, they have certain designation of what makes it historical? So.
The list that we're going to get is barracks that were transferred from the military when they shut down to private citizens. So that was the designation.
The old cottage and... Maybe specific buildings that were military.
The hospital. And
correct.
Mess hall, stuff like that.
Okay, the other one that I was asked to present is the idea of expanding the boundaries for the historic district. I did present that. I talked to the council and reminded them that if we go back 2 years or 2.5 years ago when we started this process, that we all were fairly new, and the town council suggested at that time just looking at the B1 district as the district. I suggested that there are historic properties, you know, outside the B1 district, and that there was some interest on the part of the Historic Preservation Commission to perhaps extend the boundaries. I didn't suggest that one way or the other. I said, you know, that, you know, we really don't know, but if they felt if that we would possibly come back with a proposal. And there were four members there. One member was not present, but based upon the four members, they said, come back with a proposal. If we think that the historic boundary should be expanded or not expanded or whatever, they were certainly willing to listen to a proposal. There was nothing more concrete than that, other than they certainly didn't have a problem with us coming back with a proposal if we thought that it should be expanded. So the question is, where do we go from here? First of all, is there a general opinion that we should be looking to expand it right now or not, even before?
I'd like to say that, because I walked down Atlantic Avenue several times. I was looking at the different buildings. And there are some newer ones already up on Atlantic Avenue, and there are the older ones that are there too. But it just seems like it's like water under the bridge already. I think that changes have happened already, and for the to put the burden again, as we've done in the current historic district, to put that burden on every homeowner if they want to, you know, change something on the outside of their house. Like, I feel like we've done enough with the B1 district, and I personally would rather not see it expand.
Okay. And again, remind that we're not protecting historic properties. The way it's set up is to make sure things are consistent. You know, I mean, people can knock down a historic property, but we're looking for consistency, not to protect a historic property.
But I think the people that want to make improvements or, you know, renovations, and I think that a lot has changed in the town in the last couple of years. I've seen a lot of improvements, and everything's been very tasteful without any regulation. I think the, you know, people are just doing a nice job on their own. And then also what I was thinking too, and tell me if I'm wrong, but because I wasn't here at the very beginning of the Historic Preservation Commission being formed, but was it because council wanted to be sure that the business district, like protecting against a McDonald's coming in with the Golden Arches, and so it's more that they wanted to be careful about what the downtown looked like as businesses may come in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I certainly can't speak for council, but you know, I think there were several concerns, and you know, maybe our council member can, because you know, Judge O was very instrumental in terms of talking about this, but one was concerned about the McDonald's and things like that coming in. There was some interest in preserving, you know, the kind of the family orientation, not having some of the motels or hotels knocked down and just put up a big house and all that sort of thing.
No, that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I think there are about three kind of driving issues there.
So,
could I make an observation?
Sure.
Whenever. You know, it strikes me that if there's no addressing preservation, then the committee is misnamed. The Historic Preservation Committee should be primarily, though not exclusively, looking at preserving what we have as opposed to just going in and knocking it down. I can understand that there would be concerns for people who purchased property before the commission was there, or the committee was there, but once the precedent is set, you know, we're not there to preserve the properties, then I'm wondering what we're there for.
Well, actually, the Historic Preservation Commission is the title that is required by state law. But our district is called, and maybe Beth can help me with the formal district name, it's the Curie Beach Downtown
Preservation Overlay District.
Yeah. It's the Curie Beach Downtown Preservation Overlay District. So we're not preserving historic buildings. What we're doing is preserving the ambiance and consistency and that sort of thing within the downtown area right now. That was always one of the big issues in terms of, you know, preserving actual historic buildings. And again, our interest is not doing that. In fact, the title of the district is not historic. I mean, the word historic does not appear in the name of the district.
from the committee.
That's because it's required by state law that we be called the Historic Preservation Commission. We can't change that.
Well, sorry, I had to pull up your document. It's the Curie Beach Downtown Preservation and Historic District.
Okay, the so Curie Beach Downtown Preservation and Historic District. So it does have the word historic in it. But the question right now is whether the commission is interested in looking at expanding the boundaries or not. You know, we're not under any obligation to do it.
Right.
And Kathleen suggested no. Go.
I a little bit of research. I pulled out some old military atlases of federal points from 1864 to 1865. And cursory view, I think that the buildings that are on those maps are probably no longer there. But the sites are. And we do have, outside of the Fourville area, a number of the Air Force barracks that have been moved. In fact, some of them have been moved a couple of times, that are, some would argue they're not historic, they're only World War II. But I would say, you know, give it a couple more years and they will be. So, yeah, I'm definitely in favor of expanding the district, quite frankly, because I don't think you need four or five people to watch over four blocks.
Okay. Joe, what do you think?
I just want to say, it seems like we're picking and choosing. Right now we have a district, a well-marked district. And lying outside of that district, there's some properties that we're considering as older historic sites, and we're trying to include them. It's my belief that the Federal Point process of getting them a plaque or a sign or whatever they want to have to designate them as a Federal Point historic property, I forget the name, I'm sorry, Jim, but, and I see that as being the better alternative and keeping our district as it is, and not having to expand the district for these outliers. That's my personal opinion.
So you would be in favor of maybe perhaps looking to expand it?
Of not expanding.
Okay, I'm sorry. Jim?
My personal opinion is that since there's 40-some of these buildings spread throughout town, that anything that we try to do to tell that homeowner that, no, you can't do this, but your neighbor can, that's probably a bridge I don't want to be on the board to cross. They're going to burn crosses. I think the minute that we pick little circles, you know, one person on this block can't do something on their house that everybody else on the block can. Their house happens to be historic by definition of the town.
Yes.
I think the commission needs to keep in mind that there are the following points. Number one, I don't believe the chairman brought up to council, when it comes to historic properties, there's two ways to go. One is to create the district, and one is to create historic landmarks. It's the landmarks which would be right. The outliers and the circles. But I don't believe that the commission as a whole or council as a whole is interested in the historic landmark process. I think this topic is expansion of the current overlay district boundaries. And let me circle back to the statutes for a minute. Chairman's right that the statutes use the nomenclature historic preservation, but when you look at the statutes, and you all probably remember this, except for perhaps the newcomers, municipalities are authorized to establish historic preservation commissions to help preserve not just history, architecture, culture, and feel real fuzzy words, association, feelings, ambiance. So Don't focus on the word historic preservation when you're talking about the district, because really what this commission, what this municipality did was to adopt that idea of preserving the B1 district with the characteristics that are currently there, and that's why the test for any change in that district is whether that change is consistent with the look and feel of the district as itself. Also, don't confuse expanding the boundaries of a district meant to maintain those characteristics with the process for designating individual properties. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about expanding the boundaries.
Yeah, thank you. It's a process that we've talked about many times when we set up this, is that the word historic is a misnomer to some extent. Now, you know, you can preserve to the historic district historic properties, but it is much more than that. In fact, the way we have written our, quote, historic district really doesn't have anything to do with history. It has to do with preserving the ambience and the culture and the feel for the downtown. And so when we talk about expanding the boundaries, we're talking about expanding that motivation.
That's correct.
And not trying to preserve historic properties. The general feeling, you know, if, for example, right now we just have the 4-square block area under the B1 district, is there a general feeling that should we expand the boundaries, not to preserve any historic properties, because our regulations don't preserve those, but do we feel that by expanding the boundary that we can preserve the ambiance of the community better than just limiting it to the B1 district? I think that's kind of the question that we're talking about. Would you agree?
Yes, and really you can phrase it a different way. Does the ambiance that you're referring to, the look and the feel, the small town friendly atmosphere, the all of that, is that adjacent to, and if you take your boundaries and go one block that way, one block east, one block west, I guess you wouldn't go east, I guess you go west, north, and south, is some of that ambience next door that's not in the district at the present time that you would like to preserve that feeling of?
Yeah, I agree. So it is a little bit confusing that we use that word historic district, to say the least, on this sort of thing. My general opinion is that I would like to see the boundaries expanded, but I would perhaps like to wait a little bit until we actually have a COA come through and see, you know, how it works. We haven't had a lot of activity yet. And so my general feeling is let's see how it works before we start thinking about biting off a bigger chunk. I personally would like to see it expanded a little bit, because I think we can preserve the ambiance and the feel for Curie Beach by having a little bit larger component there than what the current B1 district is. But I'm probably not in favor of looking at that right now, but I would certainly consider it in a couple months or something like that. Tony, your comments?
I'm not in favor of expanding the district. I think that I just feel like it's, you know, for 40 buildings, and I guess most of those, Jim, are going to be down toward Fort Fisher?
Most of them are south of Kay.
Yeah, so you know, we'd have to, I think if you go a block or two blocks or whatever here, you don't really accomplish anything. You have another district that's way south. So I don't really see, you know, just expanding this area. If the conversation was around, you know, what buildings are there, you know, we could plot them out on the map and wanted to evaluate it, see if it was worth the while, and what types of buildings they were, I would entertain that conversation. But this expanding the district, you know, to a bigger footprint here, no, I'm not in favor.
Well, based upon that, it doesn't sound like we have a majority to look at that issue right now. So I think we should just probably let it die at the present time. Which is fine, you know, and that's what I told the council. I said that, you know, I didn't promise one way or the other, but did they have a problem with us coming back with a proposal? And our proposal right now is not to expand it, it sounds like.
Joe, let me ask a question. Can there be two districts? Could we have a district and an annex district for, like, say, those properties that are further south?
Yeah, we could certainly add another historic district. That would it'd be a separate historic district. I don't think you can, I don't know, can you have a non-contiguous historic district as a single historic district?
If it's hard work, we just can't pick and choose.
You just have to go through the process again.
Yeah, and we can't do spot zoning either, so we got to be careful about that.
I think if we had a Jim, is there a map that we could view or that have available?
Yeah,
if we could have something like that, just to kind of evaluate kind of what buildings they are, it might help us, you know, have a better discussion about it.
Well, she had said at the last meeting that she took pictures. So I can see getting access to the pictures.
Okay.
Pictures of every address that we gave her.
Again, I just want to make sure you all are accurately discussing the concept. The example I would use, and I'm not promoting one thing or another, but if you go, it must be the west side of the B1 district, keep in mind that that boundary either stops at the property line or is in the center of the street, I don't remember which, but right on the other side of that street along the western boundary, you have the same kind of scale and mixture of houses, again, not historical per se, but it certainly is part of the feeling that you get on that side of town. So you have to ask yourselves I would think you would want to consider what happens if you didn't include those properties, for example, across the street, and development occurred as would be permitted in whatever district it is across the street, and the inability to control regulate any aspect of that, how that would impact on the preservation district side of the street. So I think that's part of the consideration. I don't know how we got focused on other specific historical properties in the southern part of the municipality. I think, if you think about, again, on the west side of the preservation district, you've got scale and ambiance. And that exists on the other side as well, but that's not regulated. So anything that's in that district can happen. How does that impact on the preservation district that's right across the street? That's my point. And again, it doesn't matter.
I
just want to make sure you all understand what we're talking about.
Okay, Gary, yes?
Yeah, I could play devil's advocate on something. If we have a four-block district, which is what we have, I could foresee with the prices of the property here versus other places on the East Coast that the properties outside of that district could be bought and could be developed by the homeowners, and we could have mini mansions all over the place, which would then make the B1 district look kind of shabby. And Kiri Beach would no longer have that ambiance of a mid-20th century family beach, which is one of the reasons we bought there.
Yeah, thank you. And again, this is Craig, and I agree with you 100%. I'm probably in favor of expanding the district just to preserve that overall ambiance that Kiri Beach has. My only concern right now is we haven't even approved the webpage, and I would kind of like to hold off on that discussion for a little bit longer before we start jumping about expanding. But I'm probably in favor of it because preserve the ambiance of what makes Kiri Beach Kiri Beach, I think, is the key thing here. Not preserving historic properties, but preserving the overall ambiance. And for some of the folks that are kind of a little bit newer to the commission, one of the reasons we're looking at this is because the statute in North Carolina is somewhat unique. In most states, cities can establish architectural requirements and design standards and things like that. We cannot do that in North Carolina. We cannot have a separate design standard or architectural standard for the town. It's against North Carolina law. The only mechanism that a town has to be able to do that is through the historic district process. And that's one of the motivating things. It's not necessarily, you know, we'd love to preserve historic properties, but that's the motivation to a large extent is to preserve the ambiance, the culture, the feel through design standards and these sort of things. And so that's why we have our district. But my suggestion would be perhaps wait just a little bit for that discussion.
And this is going to sound ridiculous, but it just came into my head. If we are going to expand that historic preservation area, it should just be the entire town limits.
That we can't do.
Why not?
Unfortunately.
Why not? I mean, just it's an overlay district, and let it overlay every district then, because I think we did just fine here doing it in the B1. I think that was adequate. But as you said, we'll continue the discussion.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like there's a majority opinion to make that discussion right now. But perhaps we can come back to it in 6 months or something like that, if that's okay. Okay? All right. Okay, next item is the HPC web page design.
To government, you will find your Historic Preservation Commission tab. If you click there, you'll find the write-up that I did, a picture of the district, and then all your links on the side. So you guys can take in your free time just a minute to review it, and then just email me any changes that you would like.
Would you include the application and instructions?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
right
there.
Here is the certificate of appropriateness. If you click this link, it takes you to that page, and then it has the printable and available application. But just let me know if you have any questions once you read it, or if you'd like anything changed.
I think it looks great just from what I can see here.
And for the record, I just want to say that I spent an hour this afternoon looking at that, and I clicked on every link and I read every word, and I think it's fantastic.
Excellent.
And I think
Beth
did a wonderful job.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right.
And thank you for all that effort, Beth.
Also under old business, I just wanted to bring up an article that I read in the paper. Maybe we can bring that up. And this has to do with the appeals court overturning a decision, a special use permit by the New Hanover County. And when I read that, you know, whenever I see something kind of planning oriented, I always read it. And the article, I think, was quite clear, is that, you know, and obviously the special use permit is a quasi-judicial process. And so this points out that the appeals court overturned it and now is going to require the county of New Hanover to issue that special use permit, even though they denied it. And the reason they gave is because of the lack of expert testimony. And Mr. Eldridge, would you like to comment on this? I think it really emphasizes and underlines what we've been talking about already, is the importance of doing things properly in these quasi-judicial things.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a few comments. I think this occurred in Wilmington, wasn't it? Or New Hanover County.
It's in Ogden, so it's in New Hanover County.
There's several takeaways on this, but to understand the background, the developer came forth with expert witnesses regarding and presented a traffic impact statement, which provided the opinion that there wouldn't be any safety issues with the increased volume of traffic. There was also expert testimony from engineers providing an opinion that the stormwater runoff drainage issues would actually be mitigated or improved by the development. There may have been one other expert witness on the point on the developer's point. There were opponents to this, and the trouble with the opposition was that they presented a lot of lay witnesses, people like us. And it was pretty well coordinated. They had PowerPoints, and they had opinions, and they had slides. And they basically talked about the condition of the road, the fact that it wouldn't be safe, the historic problems they've had with stormwater flooding in that area. And the most interesting quote in that article was the deputy county attorney advising the county board of commissioners that the opposition's evidence by the lay persons was not competent and material, and that eventually if you deny the permit, you're going to be ordered to reissue it. I thought that was a very telling comment by counsel to his client. What happened then was the commissioner sat on it for 90 days or more, and then the decision was reached denying the permit based on the evidence presented by the opposition. That went to Superior, and it's true for anybody affected by all municipalities, that when that the developer appealed that decision on the special use permit to the Superior Court, and the Superior Court correctly pointed out that the evidence presented by the opposition was not competent and material because it wasn't, you needed expert testimony. But then there was a finding by the Superior Court that was inconsistent with all of that and said that the evidence was nonetheless competent for the purposes of denying the permit. So the Superior Court affirmed the county commissioners denying the special use permit. When it got up to the Court of Appeals, that was reversed because the opposition's evidence was not competent because it needed to be in the form of expert opinions. The developer had his expert opinions, the lay opposition did not. So as a result, and this is what happens in those cases, when it comes to quasi-judicial decisions, well, first of all, when you appeal a quasi-judicial decision to a court, it goes to the county superior court. And it's much like the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court. No new evidence is introduced, no testimony is taken. What the Superior Court does is look at the record of the quasi-judicial hearing below, and based on statutory standards that we're going to take a peek at in a second, either give that decision a thumbs up or a thumbs down. If the reviewing court, whether it's the Superior Court or in this particular instance the Court of Appeals, which found that the Superior Court had made an error about the competency of the evidence, the bottom line is when you get into court upon appealing a quasi-judicial decision, it's important to note that the court, if it reverses the quasi-judicial decision, has the authority to require that local government unit to issue the permit. It's not, they don't say, you did it wrong, do it over again. They say, you did it wrong, and I'm going to order you to give the man, the developer, the permit. That's what happened. This case. You'll see, and I think it was in this one as well, that when the court reaches that decision, it usually ends its opinion by saying, we remand this back to the trial, to the Superior Court for further proceedings, meaning that at some point in time, the Superior Court judge that made the decision, this will come back to him, the attorneys will be present. He'll correct his findings of fact, and he'll issue a new order requiring the county to issue the permit. The point I wanted to make about that is, if I was the developer's attorney, and I knew that we would have further proceedings in Superior Court based on the Court of Appeals decision requiring the issuance of the permit, I would make sure that I included in those further proceedings my request for attorney's fees for the county having acted beyond the scope of its authority in erroneously denying the special use permit. So I think that's an important consideration to keep in mind. But the point, I'll close with one other point as soon as I get back to it. Our code is part of the 160D rewrite. In 1210.020, we referenced that appeals of quasi-judicial decisions shall be taken in accordance with the provisions of 160D 1402. And that's the statute that tells you everything you need to know, and actually we discussed this in the quasi-judicial training session we've already had about how a superior court reviews a quasi-judicial decision. I'm not going to go through all that, but I wanted to draw your attention to the highlighted portions, which talks about what competent evidence is. Competent evidence is used in this subsection, regardless of whether it's objected to or not, shall not include opinion testimony by lay witnesses to the use of property that affects the value. In other words, lay opposition usually focus their opposition on two points. That development's going to create traffic problems, increased volume, and that's going to be a risk to public safety, and or that development's going to make my property values go down. The highlighted portions in the statute say that even if there's no objection to lay testimony, in other words, non-expert testimony about those two points, or as in C, any other matter which should be a subject for expert testimony, that even if that lay evidence is not objected to, this statute says that evidence is not competent. And that's exactly what happened in the case that you are bringing our attention to. I simply wanted to make you all aware that based on our code reference to this statute, that when you hear a quasi-judicial matter, be guided by this highlighted portion.
So the bottom line is that you can have passionate people, and this is only in quasi-judicial situations, but you can have very passionate people arguing, but we need to make a decision, or the council in a special use permit needs to make a decision based upon competent testimony. So anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting, given that that this came out just yesterday or today, and you know, really kind of underlines the sort of thing that Mr. Eldridge has been talking about. Okay, next item. There was one other item there.
December council meeting.
Yes, December council meeting.
After you saw the new vice chair.
Okay, so again, we have to. Ken was the vice chairperson of the HPC, so now we have to elect a new vice chairperson. Is there anybody who would like to volunteer? That's usually the best way to get over this hump. All right. Well, Jim made the most motion to duck his head, so I think that's a. Yeah. I will nominate Jim then to be the vice chairperson.
I'll second that.
Speaking on behalf of Jim, I would fall on the will of the board. Okay. I would also think that I'm as new as anybody is to the board, and possibly seniority should enter into it too. But at least I do have the experience as far as running meetings, for good or bad.
All right, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That was a quick thing. Thanks for volunteering. let's see. Meetings. Yeah, in terms of new business, we were talking about meetings. Kathleen brought up a very good point that We had talked several months ago about meeting only when necessary, once you get kind of everything all wrapped up, and we're kind of getting to that point. We do have some training that is we'll be doing in January, and then a mock trial, I think you said, that would be due in February.
A mock COA hearing. Yes.
Mock COA hearing, right. So do we need a motion or just...
I'll need a motion for you to cancel the December and meet in January.
Right, okay. So there's that issue of canceling the December meeting. So is there a motion to cancel the December meeting?
I make a motion to cancel.
So second? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And then probably we'll have to have a motion, and we'll have our January meeting probably. And at that time, we'll probably have a motion about changing our schedule to be on-demand type of schedule then. Okay. Is there anything else related to the HBC that anybody wants to talk about? I remember what it was. We do have a vacancy.
You're going to discuss that technically in P&Z a little bit later. Your P&Z alternate sets in.
That's only our sixth HBC person. We need a seventh HBC person.
You're Gary. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Got it. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Okay.